This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, you're listening to Beyond the Ballot Box with me, Dashran Johan. At long last, the lowering of voting age from 21 to 18 and automatic voter registration has been gazetted and was officially implemented yesterday, December the 15th. This means that the upcoming Sarawak state elections will be the last time Malaysian youths aged 18 to 21 will miss out on an opportunity to cast their ballot. Today, I'll be catching up with Kira Yusri. She's the co-founder of Undi 18 to discuss how she's feeling after tirelessly pushing for this for 5 years and also what this could mean for the future of our political landscape. But before that, let's revisit a conversation I had with the two co-founders of Undi 18, Kira Yusri and Tharma Pillay, back in April on how they started this movement 5 years ago while they were still students in the US.
We knew each other through student organizations in the US. Tharma was the student president of his regional student organization called the East Coast Presidential Council, and I was the student president for the Midwest Council. So if you know how like a Malaysian Students in America work, we have three regions broken down, essentially managed by the Malaysian Embassy. So then each of these regions, we have our own student organization because we were just too big, you know, so you do need sort of some form of centralization in terms of like coordination. Anyway, we eventually joined a group called the Malaysian Students Global Alliance, which at that time had about almost 20 member councils of Malaysian students around the world. So this was very significant because it helped us build, you know, it gave us access to like a coalition of student leaders that were representative of their peers and their community in the specific countries. So we had Malaysian students from studying in Malaysia, we have Malaysian students studying in Indonesia, in Hong Kong, in the UK, US, Australia, even Egypt and China as well, you know, because we have Malaysian students all around the world.
Right.
And interestingly, at that time also, you know, as Malaysian students living in the US, it was also the US presidential elections. And that was the year that Donald Trump became president. So I think personally for me, it was a very transformative experience in terms of my political awakening, because I was not politically active, you know, growing up as a teenager or as a child. My parents voted, right, and they talked about voting, but they would just, you know, they just do it, but they don't really, we don't talk about politics at home. And being on campus as a Malaysian, as an international student, and then you see so much of political discourse happening, it was very bizarre for me. You know, like in the US, right, we have college Democrats, college Republicans who are official associations.
Wow.
And they would debate it out in the cafeteria, and they were just arguing about immigration policies, which affected people like me, international students. They were debating about economic policies, TPPA, you know, which Malaysia was involved in. So it was so interesting. And even politicians were actively campaigning on campus. Like Bernie Sanders came to my university. I was like, you know, like, wow, like, you know, I've never met a Malaysian politician before that. And then, you know, you have a US presidential candidate coming to universities, trying to engage young people. And I had classmates who were 18, 19 years old, who have already voted at a local council or local government levels, right? Meaning they understand the importance of casting a vote. They understand the importance of democracy and participation. So I think that was a little bit of like, you know, for us as Malaysian student leaders at the time, we were thinking, why don't we see this kind of political discourse in Malaysia? Why don't we see this kind of appreciation of democratic processes in Malaysia? So that was, you know, one of the inspirations behind Undi 18, I would say. We figured that, you know, let's start by talking about how Malaysia was one of the very few countries, I think less than 10 maybe countries in the world, that still had our voting age at 21 and above. Yeah.
Now, once y'all had the idea of Undi 18, y'all come back to Malaysia, I would imagine this is when the real work actually starts, right? I'm so curious, how did two young people who nobody knew at the time manage to take an idea and get it on the opposition's, which at the time was Pakatan Harapan, get it on their official manifesto? How did y'all accomplish this?
I think for us, the most powerful part is that is social media. So we realized that even while we are a bunch of nobodies, right, we didn't have powerful parents. We are not extremely wealthy. We do not have extremely good connections. So essentially, we were a bunch of nobodies. But I think we realized that looking at how digital movements were happening around the world, we realized that this is something that we could apply to Malaysia. So the idea of Undi 18 itself, the hashtag Undi 18, was something that we created in order to move those conversations within online spaces. Because before that, this issue would have been lowering the voting age, penurunan umur mengundi di Malaysia, which you cannot track, you cannot you cannot make it into a hashtag, you cannot make it into an online conversation. So we decided to go with that, with a digital campaigning strategy. So using that online platform, it helped us to elevate our voice, and using Twitter a lot, actually, it helped us to get in touch with the right people. But of course, before even Pakatan Harapan accepted us, we were really trying hard with Barisan Nasional. We tried to reach out to, because they were government at the time, and we really tried our best to speak to many, many, many young Barisan Nasional leaders to say that, hey, this is something that matters for the country. Malaysia is sort of long overdue to make this change. So we tried our best, and we even tried to get it as part of the TN50 manifesto or TN50 agenda. Unfortunately, our approaches with Barisan Nasional at the time completely failed. But we realized that in this bipartisan approach, we have to speak to everyone, whether it's Barisan Nasional, PAS, or PH. So we were very lucky that PH youth especially decided to bring this on as part of their youth manifesto back in 2017. And then when there was a main PH manifesto, it was absorbed. The lowering of voting age was absorbed into the main manifesto. So when they became government, we basically worked together with the Pakatan Harapan government and pushed it through. So I think that was the advocacy strategy that we went about doing, using digital platforms, but also making sure that we do the on-the-ground engagements with the key politicians.
Yeah, so even before Sadiq became a YB, right, he was, you know, he was rising up as a youth activist, and then, of course, you know, making his intention to join politics quite clear. He actually saw our campaign and noticed our digital campaign, and he reached out to us saying that this was something that he supported. And I think we continued having conversations, and, you know, especially when, you know, Pakatan Harapan was formed, and then he was, you know, one of the youth leaders in Pakatan Harapan, and, you know, he made it a priority to ensure that Undi 18 was on the manifesto. And I think when he became minister, that was one of his very first reform initiatives that he insisted that the ministry needed to work on. So, you know, from when he was in the ministry, we began working with his team to, you know, do more campaigns, you know, help prepare engagements with agencies and also other ministries to ensure that, you know, that we, because it had to be presented in cabinet first before, you know, it could go to parliament. So Right. Even winning over the Malaysian cabinet was not something, it was not an easy feat for him to pull off, because he was such a young minister, right? And, you know, PH had so many reforms they wanted to push through. It was a challenge to sort of like emphasize that, okay, youth agency is something that is very important that we need to execute as soon as possible.
I think few people would deny that Pakatan Harapan was perhaps the most progressive government we've had, at least in recent years. But they're not without their faults, right? I mean, they promised a lot on the manifesto, most of which they did not fulfill. Mm-hmm. One thing they did fulfill, though, was amending the constitution to lower the voting age from 21 to 18. Here's the thing. Making changes to the constitution of Malaysia would require 2/3 support from parliament, which is a number that Pakatan Harapan did not have. They were a simple majority government. So how did Pakatan Harapan, together with the movement that you guys were leading, how did y'all manage to convince people on the other side of the aisle that this is good for our political landscape as a whole?
Yeah, I think to begin with, our movement was bipartisan to start off. Even before we engaged, like even before Pakatan Harapan became government, our movement was bipartisan. We had volunteers from different political parties, you know, especially even Pemuda UMNO as well. So clear, we could see that, you know, the idea of Undi 18 was palatable to some people on the opposition as well. So, you know, as an NGO, we also tried our best to meet up with senior Barisan National leaders, you know, even meeting, trying to meet MCA, MIC to talk about UNDI 18 and convince them that, you know, this is an issue that that actually can benefit everyone. You know, I think the main question and concern they had initially was that UNDI 18 would only be helpful to Pakatan Harapan. But young people traditionally vote, there are trends that show that young people vote against the establishment. Mm-hmm. So at that point in time, it would actually be not, it was not, you would say that, you know, it's not a good idea for Pakatan Harapan to push that through when they were in power, right? Mm-hmm. So for on our side, you know, one thing that Tharma did was that he wrote a letter addressed to every single MP and every single senator, and we mailed it to them or hand-delivered them whenever we could to outline the arguments of UNDI 18 and how specifically UNDI 18 can be beneficial to them in their constituency. Because the reality is every constituency has young people. Every constituency has 18 to 20-year-olds. If they vote no on this bill, it will send a very bad signal to young people, because if you tell them no now, eventually they will turn 21. Eventually they will become voters. So we try to, you know, showcase that young people, you know, besides highlighting really amazing young people who have achieved really awesome things, we also wanted to highlight that, you know, voting is not a privilege, it is a human right. And that, you know, for MPs, for Malaysian MPs, we wanted to, you know, inform them that, you know, that we wanted to encourage them to be on the right side of history and supported the amendment when the time comes.
So now you guys are public figures. Your Twitter following, your social media following is growing. Politicians are always keeping tabs on what you guys are saying, your achievements, what you guys are pushing for. I guess being a public figure, with it comes its fair shares of downside, right? I guess the downside is some of the criticisms that y'all will be constantly facing. And one of the criticisms I've seen being thrown at y'all, especially on social media, is that you guys come from privileged families and, you know, I mean, y'all went to the US to study. So what will y'all, what do y'all even know about what the common Malaysians are going through? How would you respond to these kinds of criticisms? How do you take it in without it dampening your spirits to keep, you know, pushing forward?
I think for me, the simplest reality is that when I look at my own background, I am from a B40 background. Right, my mom is a single parent. My uncle is a lorry driver. Right, so these are the kind of experiences that I face, and the only reason why I managed to go to the US and study was because I was on a government scholarship. So looking at the reality of my own life, to say that it is a movement by privileged individuals, the reality is that it's absolutely untrue. Right, looking at my own background, mm-hmm. But I think the more important thing is that why do people say these kind of things? Why do people throw those kind of accusations in a bit to delegitimize the movement? It's because they are not able to argue based on facts, and they are only using sentiment to counter these ideas and try to delegitimize the movement. And I think that's what advocates and activists need to sort of brace themselves when we face the crowd, right? Then there needs to be a certain level of patience, a certain level of like of acceptance that yes, there will be trolls, there will be people who will hurl unfair accusations against you, but you must rise above, you must come up with solid arguments, you must come up with the facts, right? For example, when we come up with data based on the Ministry of Education's educational blueprint, that only about 48% of Malaysians go to tertiary education, 52% of Malaysians stay and either work full-time immediately at 18, 19 years old, or they go into a short course and then they start working, or they already have a family, right? So these are the kind of realities of people around the country. So I think the idea is this: if people fight you with sentiment, you bring the argument, you bring the facts to shut them up. And I think most importantly is that to not be deterred, even when people are attacking you, because the reality is that at least for me, right, I know that I am not from a privileged background, but even being from an underprivileged background, I believe that this is something that matters for all Malaysians. This will change the landscape of how we see young people, how we educate young people, and how we respect what young people are demanding for.
What about you, Kira?
I think so. I have a very different upbringing than Tharma, right? So I am very lucky that my dad, my parents managed to break out a poverty cycle when they were young themselves. So I went to the US on with my parents' support. But I grew up in Miri, Sarawak as well because we moved there when I was younger. And my experience of seeing injustice and seeing inequality was through the work of my mother. My mother was a civil servant. She's a government school teacher and she teaches pendidikan khas or special children, right? Mm. And she was the only kindergarten teacher in Miri, in the town where, it's a city actually, it's a city. And there's only one government kindergarten for special children, meaning that, you know, if you are unable, before we moved to Miri, if you are below 7 years old and you want the education, you had to send your kids to private school or private centers if your kids were had disabilities. I saw my mom fought for her students' rights when growing up as a teenager. You know, she would march up and down to the district education office asking them, where are my students' allowances? Because if you're a person with disabilities, you qualify for allowance OKU. And her students were not getting the money on time. And if you know, when it comes to lower income communities, allowances are important because if, you know, they rely on it every month to survive.
Right.
And my mom was like, you know, marching up and down. She faced racism. She faced sexism. She faced discrimination in the public sector, in the work that she does. And I felt like I am able to continue my studies. I am able to study the degree that I wanted in the university that I wanted. It was my role, my obligation to give back to the community. I wanted to be a government teacher as well to Teach for Malaysia, but I didn't meet certain criteria. So I ended up working for Teach for Malaysia as a staff member. And through there, I again worked with students from B40 communities. I went to schools. I observed how my peers were teaching in classrooms. And I realized that we need a disruption in the education system when it comes to civic engagement and civic education. So that became, so which is why, you know, after Dharma and I graduated from university, Undi 18 was something we threw our entire beings into because we really believe that so many young people deserve to have their voices heard. They deserve to have a better education system. They deserve to have governments and politicians who actually listen to them. And that is why we still do the work that we do. The question about like privilege and all that, I think for Malaysians, I think as long as we acknowledge that we are all privileged to a certain extent, you know, and because of, you know, intersectionality and all that, as long as I believe that, you know, if we acknowledge it, it's the first step of having the next conversation, right? So the conversation shouldn't stop at just dismissing someone based on your status, whether you're a man or a woman, whether you're Malay or non-Malay, and about mm-hmm. socioeconomic class. The bigger question we should ask each other is that what are we doing to contribute towards a better society, a more progressive society, towards the Malaysia that we want to have eventually? So I think that is a conversation that is often only halfway because we tend to dismiss people based on our identities.
Yeah. Definitely. And I like what you said about, you know, the youths deserve it. They deserve for their voices to be heard. But as we all know now, the lowering of voting age, which was supposed to come into effect by the middle of this year, has been postponed by the Election Commission to September 2022. Now, and one of the reasons many, and this doesn't just include, and I quote, old men, right? Even some younger ones have shared this sentiment, and they're saying that the youth just aren't politically mature enough. So let me get this straight, Kira. In Malaysia, 18-year-olds are mature enough to work. They are mature enough to drive. That despite the number of road accidents, every year,
they are
mature enough to smoke cigarettes despite health problems that come with it. They are mature enough to get married. They can have children, but somehow they are not mature enough to vote. What's so special about politics? Why suddenly 18-year-olds don't have the maturity and brain cells to make a decision on who they want, you know, who should represent them and how they want their lives to be better?
I think it comes from a place where we perceive that people may perceive that political participation is something you have to earn or something you must deserve for you to be in it. And I think we see this in, you know, how certain parties have, you have warlord cultures, you have a political culture whereby you are quote unquote rewarded with positions, you are rewarded with contracts or rewarded with like the opportunity to contest in elections, right? Because fundamentally, we don't have primaries. So all the choices of all the decisions made in terms of who runs in which kawasan is fundamentally made by party leadership.
And so by primaries, you mean like the system they have in the US?
Yes. Basically, we don't have a mechanism whereby, for example, the people in the party members can choose who do they want to represent them as an MP in that area, right? In simple terms. But fundamentally, you know, so much of political decisions, I mean, even party decisions, are made at the very top. So I think because of that, you have this perspective, you know, you perpetuate this idea whereby for you to become a political leader, you must earn your place, you know, you must climb to the top, essentially, right? But the fact of the matter is, when it comes to policy issues, you know, the average people don't climb to the top to become a stakeholder on certain issues, right? On issues of education, teenagers, our children are beneficiaries of our education policies. Do they have to, you know, you don't discriminate education policies based on how young they are, right? Just because you are younger, you don't deserve a good education system. You don't say that. So it makes no, it's a very difficult mindset to shift. It's a very difficult mindset to nudge, because it's been entrenched in our culture for years. And I always believe that when it comes to changing things, right, changing culture is one of the most difficult thing to do, because you need to do it involves behavioral changes, which is why, you know, when we campaign for Undi 18, we try to highlight that there are many aspects wrong in our political culture, right? Such as corruption, favoritism, warlordism. But if we don't allow young people to enter the playing field as an equal playing field, right, where you're not just answerable to someone senior, right, you are actually an active member of democracy, we allow them to have a say, we allow them to disrupt, and we allow them to critically look at the system. And you know, you allow them opportunity to create a system that they eventually want. And culture change is not overnight, right? You know, Undi 18 was passed 2 years ago, and today you still have a lot of people even discussing why do we need to amend lowering the vote and allow young people to vote. We still have the discussion today after 5 years of the campaign. So clearly, you know, it's not, behavior change cannot happen overnight. But what do I say to young, when people come to us and say that, oh, even young people are not mature enough in these aspects? I think we need to emphasize that political participation in democracy is, you are given the same amount of accountability as, you know, starting a family, choosing a job, signing a contract and things like that. Because decisions that you make at 18 years old don't just affect you, but affect the people around you. And voting is is similar to all these other decisions as well. So we just got to keep highlighting that part of the campaign.
Yeah, and how do you even measure maturity, right? Because the whole idea...
Exactly, you don't take an IQ test to vote.
Exactly, the whole idea of democracy is that everyone, you know, from CEOs to fishermen, from people who are, you know, if you take the IQ test, you know, they might have very high score, to people who take the IQ test and they might have very low score.
Exactly.
Everyone is allowed to vote, and that's the whole idea
and
of democracy.
In fact, that's a very elitist and classist view of seeing voting, actually, because what are we saying, that we need formal education to vote? You know, so many of our grandparents did not receive formal education. You know, so many Malaysians, like Dharma mentioned earlier, don't even finish high school or go to university. Does that make them less of a Malaysian citizen? Of course not. So we cannot discriminate, if we don't discriminate them based on these aspects, we cannot discriminate people based on age either.
Young people's vote can shape elections, and it is so important that every single Malaysian realizes that we can hold our government accountable, that we can demand for better, that we can ask for more from our elected representatives. So when we go down to the ballot box, it is important to keep that in mind, to activate those around you, to explain what are the issues that matter. Because if you are aware, then make sure more and more people around you are aware. Be that catalyst for change in your family, in your school, in your organization, in your community. I think that's the message. But also another important thing that I always love to say is that remember to go to vote, but remember that democracy doesn't begin and end at the ballot box. Democracy is throughout. An active citizen is what we need if we want to change this country and make sure that Malaysia is on track. So we need to be holding our politicians accountable even outside of elections, constantly to make sure that they deliver what they promised, they deliver what's best for the country and also for all citizens.
Tama wrapped it up very well. I think more importantly, when it comes to political participation, I always believe that we need more empathy and we need more kindness when we approach leadership. So I hope that, you know, when more young, when young people have identified the platform or avenue that they want to begin working on, you know, besides the policies and besides the causes, is to integrate empathy and kindness in the work that they do, so that we eventually can have the idea, the Malaysia that we want to have, instead of just talking about it all the time.
All right. Now, guys, before we wrap up this conversation, y'all have now, y'all are on the Forbes 30 Under 30 Asia list. What started as a small idea, just the two of y'all brainstorming, and now it has grown into such a really a significant movement, right? Everyone in the country knows Undi 18. So what's next for you guys? Where do y'all see, how much more do y'all want to grow? What sort of impact are y'all hoping to make in the next, I don't know, 5 to 10 years?
I think as young people go, we're gonna take it as it is, right? But as Tarmo pointed out, I think what I've learned over the past 5 years is to not overplan. Honestly, because times change so fast, right? And I think the past 5 years of being advocacy is just learning how to pivot, learning how to adapt, and learning how to take on the challenges that are thrown our way, but also more importantly, seizing opportunities when they come. So one of the things that we're working on this year, that we have quite a number of very interesting programs coming up. One of the things that's ongoing right now is Fellow Parliament, where we are incubating 45 projects run by youth all around Malaysia in their own constituencies on various advocacy causes. This year, in July, 1 year after we co-organized Parliament Digital, we are launching a program called Dewan Muda Malaysia, whereby collaborating with UNICEF, we are launching a 2-year program to introduce and educate and work with 222 young Malaysians on issues of policy making and the process and parliamentary processes. The reason being is that we realize that, you know, it's time to invest sustainably and invest long term in young Malaysians, which is why we are trying out this method of programming instead of just one off workshops and webinars. But also, Tarma mentioned that we are launching Undi Negaraku soon, which is a nationwide movement to allow young people to have a platform for them to run their own advocacy causes or to pursue their own advocacy interests in their own areas. I think the idea is that for us, we, no matter what, in what format or iteration our programs come up, the focus is and always will be, how do we encourage more young people to participate actively in our democracy? How do we encourage more policy discourse to happen among young Malaysians, specifically from the age of the 15 years old onwards? And how do we create a platform where young people can have difficult conversations and participate in discourses without a fear of being discriminated or stigmatized on issues that they care about?
I think for me, there are two things that we want to work on. One is to continue the advocacy methods, because we realize that this method that we're doing can work. There is elements that that are effective, and we want to replicate it. So the most immediate one that we're calling for is Senate reform, especially to lower the age of eligibility to become a senator through our campaign, Senate 18. We're also talking more about local council elections, because that's how you get more young people into politics and have more localized representation and accountability. We're also talking about things like climate change and women's representation. So these are the kind of advocacy issues that we want to immediately work on and hopefully succeed within the next 5 to 10 years. But larger than that, to support these advocacy methods is to create this larger movement where young Malaysians are interested, are passionate about ideas of governance, about ideas of voter education, about concepts of policy making. I think that's something that we want to push through our movement of Undi Negaraku. So the idea is this: can we create a mass of, let's say, 1,000 youth champions for every single state, going to schools, going to universities, talking to their families and friends about things that matter, explaining things, concepts like minimum wage, GST versus SST, ideas such as good governance, right? These are the things that people really don't understand. And there's a really big disparity right now because a lot of people are not exposed to this in within the schooling system. They do not have these ideas taught to them in an effective, structured manner. So we do have to have a larger movement to address the kind of vacuum that the education system has sort of left us with. And it's unfortunate that we as an NGO have to do it, but I guess it's something that needs to be done to educate the public on voter education, to make sure that we have an entire new generation of educated, knowledgeable, and active voters who are ready to engage and improve our democratic system and improve our country.
That was an edited conversation with the co-founders of Undi 18, Kira Yusri and Tharma Pillay, after they had been selected to be on Forbes 30 Under 30 Asia list a few months ago. We do have to go for a quick break now. When we come back, Kira will be joining me to share how she's feeling now that it's finally a done deal. The lowering of voting age from 21 to 18 has officially been implemented yesterday. We'll be back with more on Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Dashran Johan, and joining me on the show right now is Kira Yusri, co-founder of Undi 18, to share her thoughts and feelings now that the lowering of voting age has finally been implemented from 21 to 18. Welcome to the show, Kira. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks, Dashran.
Okay, Kira, let's get right into it. I mean, I lost count of how many Undi 18 implementation shows that I've done with you. But at long last, it finally has come into effect, like properly, finally.
The real deal for real now.
Yes, exactly. And this is what, after 5 years of relentless effort from you, your co-founder Tharma Pillay, and the rest of your team. So how are y'all feeling?
I think we're feeling really excited and just really glad, because I think the journey to get to this point has been really long, but also full of like ups and downs, right? I am aware it's not as long as many other advocacy movements and all that, but I think for young people especially, the idea of voting and politics and participating in politics is long time coming, right? And I think Undi 18 is just one of the catalysts to push forward, to push that forward even more. Yeah. Mm.
Did you see this happening, Kira, when you first thought of this idea, if I'm not mistaken, when you were a student, back in the US, and that's where, you started thinking about this. Did you see this, becoming a reality?
I think realistically, of course, it was always a very ambitious dream, right? It was a very big, ambitious dream. And as students, with no political connections, I don't think we are, we had the mindset that, okay, you know what, this is going to be our career. This is going to be something we're going to push all the way through. And maybe it's something that we can even see happen. I grew up in Malaysia where there was only one ruling regime my whole life. I didn't expect that, change or institutional reform was possible. So of course, I think, voting for the first time and then seeing a change in government and then seeing that government push through an issue I cared so deeply about, I think gave me some hope and indication that, okay, maybe this can be a reality. But if you ask me 5 years ago in my, apartment back in college that, if this was, we're going to be get this far, I would say no. It's just really, really, in a way, overwhelming, but also just really nice to be able to, be here today and talk about how, actually so many people has played a role in this journey, So I think it's really good. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And why is this important? What does this mean for Malaysian youths?
I think what it means is that it opens, so many doors for so many different opportunities, not just for voting, but also contesting, joining political parties, right? Ever since Undi 18 was passed 2 years ago, many political parties have amended their age of joining parties, joining them as a full-time member. There have been new political parties rising up. There have been more and more policies and also issues
raised about by young people, not just by politicians, but specifically by young people, because now young people are realizing that they have agency and that they matter in the overarching, in the bigger picture, you know. And I think that just means, you know, it's not just about voting, but it opens up, you know, and it really transformed the political landscape and ecosystem in Malaysia.
You know, we always, for the longest time, we've been pushing for this change. You know, like I mentioned, you know, this has been 5 years in the works. Now that it has been finally, you know, it's a done deal, what should the youths do now that it's implemented? Do you think this is going to make young people even more politically engaged?
I think, first of all, it will actually change how we understand what political engagement means, right? Because I think when people think of political engagement, they think that people will join parties. And I don't think Undi 18 will mean that people will immediately join political parties, doesn't matter what party. But what I think it will do is that people will be more aware and they will understand the implications of politics. I think we see that now with people being angry when politicians party hop, no matter which side. And I think we've seen how politics on both sides party hop, people get very angry about it. I think the Malacca elections have proven that to be true, and how resoundingly young people refuse to support or have spoken up against party hopping and what they deem as unnecessary politicking. So I think, it will, and I hope that doesn't mean that politicians think young people don't care about politics, because on the contrary, it means that we care so much about it that we want to hold people accountable and we want to hold them to a higher standards. So I think that's what it will mean for Undi 18 and what it will mean for young people in Malaysia.
And do you also think that it will sort of signal that change is possible? Because, you know, speaking to a lot of young people over the past couple of years, I'm sure you have had the same experience. A lot of disenfranchised youth, people thinking like, what's the point? Can change actually happen? And all of these things like, yeah, we can do this, we can scream and yell, but, you know, even a constitutional amendment that has already been made, it's still not coming to fruition and all of these things. People were starting to lose hope. Do you think that now that, you know, after y'all continuously pushed and pushed and pushed, taking the government to court even, and finally now that it's happened, Do you think it would show people that if we continue to push, whether it's the establishment or, you know, demand for what we want, demand for what we think is right, that change is possible?
I think absolutely. I think what the Undi 18 movement, and I don't mean like Tharma and I, but I think the movement has proven that, with perseverance, resilience, adapting to new forms of advocacy will get us to the finish line. I think, I think what it has done is that it has proven a new generation advocacy and activism. And hopefully that will also translate to a new generation of politics, because I think, for Undi 18, we started as a student movement, we started with petitions, social media campaigns, and then evolved into lobbying, and then evolved into direct action, and then evolved even with judicial activism. I think, safe to say, we've covered quite a number of facets of activism and advocacy, and even pushed and explored new boundaries of what people understand advocacy is, right? So I think what it has proven, and hopefully what it has demonstrated, is that if you give up earlier on, a petition will remain a petition. If you don't explore new alternatives, protests will just remain noises. And if you only, if you only consider suing the government without pairing it with like public engagement, politician engagements, it will just remain, it will be a risky court case. And it's a gamble, right? So I think it's important to, for people to look at the overall Undi 18 movement and see the bigger picture and take into account all the different things that we've done and how we've amended and how we've adapted and see, and consider why it is successful.
Right. Now, looking at the other side of the same coin, another thing that y'all have been pushing for and paying very close attention to is Calon 18, which is basically the lowering of minimum age of election candidates from 21 to 18. Because it wasn't just when it comes to the electorate or the voters, even candidates prior to this, you had to be 21 to be able to contest and all of that.
Yeah.
Many states have already made the amendment and have lowered their voting age from 21 to 18 for candidates. Why is this important?
I think, you know, the right to contest in elections needs to come hand in hand with the right to vote, because you cannot empower one aspect of youth enfranchisement and then, you know, oppress the other. It's ridiculous and it's impossible. So I think it's only logical that if we believe that young people have the the capacity and are able to be responsible enough to vote, they should be given the opportunity to also contest and be a candidate. Of course, there are many other systemic barriers that exist in Malaysia that might prevent or slow down and not make it as easy as me certain contests out there. But the point is, we have to begin by removing institutional barriers to that. And I think Calon 18 aims to do just that. And it's really awesome that there's only two states left that hasn't amended their state constitution. But if I'm not mistaken, there was a meeting chaired by the Prime Minister with all the chief ministers who have all committed to amend the state constitution. So, you know, hopefully by the next general election, we will be able to see not just the amendments across all the state constitutions, but also political parties fielding more youth candidates during elections.
And on that same note, right, one of the complaints that people have had, especially, you know, in recent times where people have become more vocal about the political landscape, is that, you know, there's a lot of issues that young people are facing, like the country is facing, but the when you look at the politicians that make up parliament, a lot of them are experienced people for sure, but people who have been there for years and years and years, and Tun Dr. Mahathir, for example, is in his 90s and he's still in parliament, and you got many people on both sides of the aisle, 70s and 80s, people in their 60s. Not that being, you know, you cannot be in politics when you're of a certain age, but do you think with all these changes, you will slowly start to see a shift in the makeup of parliaments and Dewan Undangan Negeris and all of that, where we will start to see more young people represented in parliament?
Yeah, I think the key word here is slowly. So I am also a realist, right? And I'm quite pragmatic. So I don't think the next general election will automatically see a flood of young people in parliament. But that's okay, right? That's okay because, you know, you don't need so many young people to truly say we have a representative democracy. We need a parliament that listens to people and in this context, understands and empathizes and considers young people as stakeholders in the policy making. And that is the whole idea of having a representative democracy, not just about your demographic makeup to be in parliament. Because that is not the sole indicator of your performances or your credibility to become a policymaker. So I think, however, I am confident that as we progress over the years and, you know, we have a few more general elections, I wouldn't be surprised if we do see, you know, an increase maybe in 10, 20, 30% of young people in parliament compared to the current numbers, which is frankly quite pathetic, that we'll see. Because by that time, the idea of youth representation has been culturalized in our society and it won't be an issue where we need to think 3-4 times why is my candidate so young? It's not going to be an issue anymore. You know, so I think that's one area that I look forward to witnessing over the next few years.
Certainly. All right. Before we wrap this conversation up, would you have a final message for us?
Yeah, I think, first of all, thanks so much for this interview. I think Undi 18 Bill is momentous, not just because it is a movement by young people, but the impact it has towards society, our country, and even global politics in general. Around the world, we see young people stepping up on issues of climate change, gender representation, economic policies and all that. And Malaysia shouldn't be left behind. So it's about time that Malaysia finally lowers its voting age to begin all these other changes and to begin this sort of wave of change where young people actually have genuine voices when it comes to speaking up. But of course, the journey, you know, the advocacy of youth representation does not end with giving them the right to vote, but it's about removing many other structural and institutional barriers that exist so that young people can become a genuine stakeholder in our political process.
On that note, Kira, thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for your relentless and continuous effort over the past 5 years. I've been speaking to Kira Yusri, co-founder of Undi 18. If you missed any part of our conversation, check out the podcast on the BFM app, bfm.my, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. You just have to look up Beyond the Ballot Box. I'm Darshan Johan, and this has been Beyond the Ballot Box, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.